eager, like he expects something from me. I shift, uncomfortable.
It's probably not something you should brag about, Amar says. The Dauntless are all about conformity, just like every other faction. It's just not as obvious here.
I nod. It's probably just a fluke, I say. I couldn't do that during my aptitude test. Next time I'll probably be more normal.
Right. He doesn't sound convinced.
Well, next time, try not to do anything impossible, all right? Just face your fear in a logical way. A way that would always make sense to you whether you were aware or not.
Okay, I say.
You're okay now, right? You can get back to the dorms on your own?
I want to say that I could always get back to the dormitory on my own. I never needed him to take me there. But I just nod again.
He claps me on the shoulder, good-naturedly, and walks back to the simulation room. I can't help but think that my father wouldn't have warned me against displaying my simulation awareness just because of faction norms. He scolded me for embarrassing him in front of the abnegation all the time, but he had never hissed warnings in my ears or taught me how to avoid a misstep before. He never stared at me, wide-eyed, until I promised to do as he said. It feels strange to know that he must have been trying to protect me. Like he's not quite the monster I imagine. The one I see in my worst nightmares. As I start toward the dorms, I hear something at the end of the hallway we just walked down. Something like quiet, shuffling footsteps moving in the opposite direction. Shauna runs up to me in the cafeteria at dinner and punches me hard in the arm. She's wearing a smile so wide it looks like it's cutting into her cheeks. There's some swelling just beneath her right eye. She'll have a black eye later.
I won, she says. I did what you said, got her right in the jaw within the first 60 seconds, and it totally threw her off her game. She still hit me in the eye because I let my guard down, but after that I pummeled her. She has a bloody nose. It was awesome.
I grin. I'm surprised by how satisfying it is. To teach someone how to do something and then to hear that it actually worked.
Well done, I say.
I couldn't have done it without your help, she says.
Her smile changes, softens, less giddy and more sincere. She stands on her tiptoes and kisses my cheek. I stare at her as she pulls away. She laughs and drags me toward the table where Zeke and some of the other Dauntless-born initiates sit. My problem, I realize, isn't that I'm a stiff. It's that I don't know what these gestures of affection mean to the Dauntless. Shauna is pretty. And funny. And in abnegation, I would go over to her house for dinner with her family if I was interested in her. I would find out what volunteering project she was working on and insinuate myself into it. And Dauntless, I have no idea how to go about that. Or how to know if I even like her that way. I decide not to let it distract me, at least not now. I get a plate of food and sit down to eat it, listening to the others talk and laugh together. Everyone congratulates Shauna on her win, and they point out the girl she beat up, sitting at one of the other tables, her face still swollen. At the end of the meal, when I'm poking at a piece of chocolate cake with my fork, a pair of erudite women walk into the room. It takes a lot to make the Dauntless go quiet. Even the sudden appearance of the erudite doesn't quite do it. There are still mutters everywhere, like the distant sound of running footsteps. But gradually, as the erudites sit down with Max and nothing else happens, conversations pick up again. I don't participate in them. I keep stabbing the cake with the fork tines, watching. Max stands and approaches Amar. They have a tense conversation between the tables, and then they start walking in my direction. Toward me. Amar beckons to me. I leave my almost empty tray behind.
You and I have been called in for an evaluation, Amar says.
His perpetually smiling mouth is now a flat line.
his animated voice a monotone.
Evaluation? I say.
Max smiles at me a little.
Your fear simulation results were a little abnormal. Our erudite friends behind us...
I look over his shoulder at the erudite women. With a start, I realize that one of them is Janine Matthews, representative of erudite. She's dressed in a crisp blue suit, with a pair of spectacles dangling from a chain around her neck, a symbol of erudite vanity pushed so far as to be illogical. Max continues,
"We'll observe another simulation to make sure that the abnormal result wasn't an error in the simulation program. Amar will take you all to the fear simulation room now."
I feel my father's fingers clamped around my arm, hear his hissing voice warning me not to do anything strange in my aptitude test simulation. I feel tingling in my palms, the sign that I'm about to panic. I can't speak, so I just look at Max, and then at Amar, and nod. I don't know what it means to be aware during a simulation, but I know it can't be good. I know that Janine Matthews would never come here just to observe my simulation if something wasn't seriously wrong with me. We walk to the fear simulation room without speaking, Janine and her assistant, I'm assuming, talking quietly behind us. Amar opens the door and lets us file in.
"I'll go get the extra equipment so you can observe," Amar says. "Be right back."
Janine paces around the room with a thoughtful expression. I'm wary of her, as all abnegation are. Taught to distrust erudite vanity, erudite greed. It occurs to me, though, as I watch her, what I was taught might not be right. The erudite woman taught me how to take apart a computer when I was volunteering in the computer lab at school wasn't greedy or vain. Maybe Janine Matthews isn't either.
"You were logged into the system as 4, Janine says after a few seconds.
She stops pacing, folding her hands in front of her.
"Which I found perplexing. Why do you not go by Tobias here?"
She already knows who I am. Well, of course she does. She knows everything, doesn't she? I feel like my insides are shriveling up, collapsing into each other. She knows my name. She knows my father. And if she's seen one of my fear simulations, she knows some of the darkest parts of me, too. Her clear, almost watery eyes touch mine, and I look away. "I wanted a clean slate," I say. She nods.
"I can appreciate that, especially given what you've gone through."
She sounds almost gentle. I bristle at her tone, staring her straight in the face. "I'm fine," I say coldly.
"Of course you are."
She smiles a little. Amar wheels a cart into the room. It carries more wires, electrodes, computer parts. I know what I'm supposed to do. I sit down in the reclining chair and put my arms on the armrests as the others hook themselves up to the simulation. Amar approaches me with a needle, and I stay still as it pinches my throat. I close my eyes, and the world falls away again. When I open my eyes, I am standing on the roof of an impossibly high building, right near the ledge. Beneath me is the hard pavement, the streets all empty, no one around to help me down. Wind buffets me from all angles, and I tilt back, falling on my back on the gravel roof. I don't even like being up here, seeing the wide, empty sky around me, reminding me that I am at the tallest point in the city. I remember that Janine Matthews is watching. I throw myself against the door to the roof, trying to pull it open as I form a strategy. My usual way to face this fear would be to leap off the ledge of the building, knowing that it's just a simulation and I won't actually die. But someone else in this simulation would never do that. They would find a safe way to get down. I evaluate my options. I can try to get this door open, but there are no tools that will help me do that around here. Just the gravel roof and the door and the sky.
I can't create a tool to get through the door, because that's exactly the kind of simulation manipulation that Janine is probably looking for. I back up, kicking the door hard with my heel, and it doesn't budge. My heart pounding in my throat, I walk to the ledge again. Instead of looking all the way down at the minuscule sidewalks beneath me, I look at the building itself. There are windows with ledges beneath me. Hundreds of them. The fastest way down, the most dauntless way, is to scale the side of the building. I put my face in my hands. I know this isn't real, but it feels real. The wind whistling in my ears, crisp and cool. The concrete rough beneath my hands. The sound of the gravel scattered by my shoes. I put one leg over the ledge, shuddering, and turn to face the building as I lower myself down, one leg at a time, until I'm hanging by my fingertips from the ledge. Panic bubbles up inside me and I scream into my teeth. Oh, God, I hate heights. I hate them. I blink tears from my eyes, internally blaming them on the wind, and feel with my toes for the window ledge beneath me. Finding it, I feel for the top of the window with one hand and press up to keep my balance as I lower myself onto the balls of my feet on the windowsill below me. My body tilts back over the empty space, and I scream again, clenching my teeth so hard they squeak. I have to do that again, and again, and again. I bend, holding the top of the window with one hand and the bottom with the other. When I have a good grip, I slide my toes down the side of the building, listening to them scrape on the stone, and let myself dangle again. This time, when I let myself drop onto the other ledge, I don't hold on hard enough with my hands. I lose my footing on the windowsill and tip back. I scramble, scratching at the concrete building with my fingertips, but it's too late. I plummet, and another scream rises up inside me, tearing from my throat. I could create a net beneath me. I could create a rope in the air to save me. No. I shouldn't create anything or they will know what I can do. I let myself fall. I let myself die. I wake with pain created by my mind singing in every part of my body. Screaming, my eyes blurry with tears and terror. I jerk forward, gasping. My body is shaking. I'm ashamed to be acting this way with this audience, but I know that it's a good thing. It will show them that I'm not special. I'm just another reckless dauntless who thought he could scale a building and failed.
Interesting, Janine says, and I can barely hear her over my own breathing. I never tire of seeing inside a person's mind. Every detail suggests so much.
I put my legs, still shaking, over the edge of the chair, and plant my feet on the ground.
You did well, Amar says. Your climbing skills are maybe a little wanting, but you still got out of the simulation quickly, like last time.
He smiles at me. I must have succeeded at pretending to be normal, because he doesn't look worried anymore. I nod.
Well, it appears that your abnormal test result was a program error. We will have to investigate the simulation program to find the flaw, Janine says. Now, Amar, I'd like to see one of your fear simulations if you wouldn't mind obliging.
Mine? Why mine?
Janine's mild smile doesn't change.
Our information suggests that you were not alarmed by Tobias's abnormal result, that you were quite familiar with it, in fact. So I would like to see if that familiarity comes from experience.
Your information? Amar says. Information from where?
An initiate came forward to express his concerns for you and Tobias's well-being, Janine says. I would like to respect his privacy. Tobias, you may leave now. Thank you for your assistance.
I look at Amar. He nods a little. I push myself to my feet, still a little unsteady, and walk out, leaving the door cracked open so I can stay and eavesdrop. But as soon as I'm in the hallway, Janine's assistant pushes the door shut, and I can't hear anything behind it. even when I press my ear to it. An initiate came forward to express his concerns, and I'm sure I know who that initiate is. Our only former erudite, Eric. For a week, it seems that nothing will come of Janine Matthews' visit. All the initiates, Dauntless Born and Transfer alike, go through fear simulations every day. And every day I allow myself to be swallowed whole by my own fears. Heights, confinement, violence, Marcus. Sometimes they blur together. Marcus at the top of tall buildings, violence in confined spaces. I always wake half delirious, shaking, embarrassed that even though I am the initiate with only four fears, I am also the one who can't dispel them when the simulations are done. They creep up on me when I least expect them, filling my sleep with nightmares and my waking with shudders and paranoia. I grind my teeth. I jump at small noises. My hands go numb without warning. I worry that I will go insane before initiation is done.
You okay?
Zeke asks me at breakfast one morning.
You look exhausted.
I'm fine, I say, harsher than I mean to be.
Oh, clearly, Zeke says, grinning. It's okay to not be okay, you know.
Yeah, right, I say, and I force myself to finish my food, even though it all tastes like dust to me these days. If I have to feel like I'm losing my mind, I'm at least putting on weight. Muscle, mostly. It's strange to take up so much space just by existing, when I used to disappear so easily. It makes me feel just a little stronger, a little more stable. Zeke and I put our trays away. When we're on our way out to the pit, Zeke's little brother, Uriah is his name, I remember, runs up to us. He's taller than Zeke already, with the bandage behind his ear that covers up a fresh tattoo. Usually he looks like he's constantly on the verge of making a joke, but not right now. Right now he just looks stunned.
Amar, he says, a little breathless. Amar is...
He shakes his head.
Amar is dead.
I laugh a little. Distantly, I'm aware that that's not an appropriate reaction, but I can't help it.
What? What do you mean he's dead?
A dauntless woman found a body on the ground near the pyre early this morning, Uriah says. They just identified it. It was Amar.
He must have...
Jumped, Zeke says.
Or fell. No one knows, Uriah says.
I move toward the paths climbing the walls of the pit. Usually I almost press my body to the wall when I do this, afraid of the height, but this time I don't even think about what's below me. I brush past running, shrieking children and the people going into shops, coming out of them. I climb the staircase that dangles from the glass ceiling. A crowd is gathered in the lobby of the pyre. I elbow my way through it. Some people curse at me or elbow me back, but I don't really notice. I make my way to the edge of the room, to the glass walls above the streets that surround the dauntless compound. Out there, there's an area sectioned off with tape, and a streak of dark red on the pavement. I stare at the streak for a long time, until I feel myself comprehending that that streak comes from Amar's blood, from his body colliding with the ground. Then I walk away. I didn't know Amar well enough to feel grief in the way I've taught myself to think of it. Grief was what I felt after my mother's death. A weight that made it impossible to move through each day. I remember stopping in the middle of simple tasks to rest and forgetting to start them again, or waking up in the middle of the night with tears on my face. I don't carry Amar's loss like that. I find myself feeling it every now and then, when I remember how he gave me my name, how he protected me when he didn't even know me. But most of the time, I just feel angry. His death had something to do with Janine Matthews and the evaluation of his fear simulation. I know it. And that means that whatever happened is also Eric's responsibility. Because he overheard our conversation and told his former faction leader about it. They killed Amar, the erudite. But everyone thinks that he jumped or fell. It's something a Dauntless would do. The Dauntless have a memorial service for him that evening. Everyone is drunk by late afternoon. We gather by the chasm, and Zeke passes me a cup of dark liquid, and I swallow it all without thinking. As the liquid calm moves through me, I sway a little on my feet and pass the empty cup back to him.
Yeah, that seems about right, Zeke says, staring into the empty cup. I'm gonna go get some more.
I nod and listen to the roar of the chasm. Janine Matthews seemed to accept that my own abnormal results were just a problem with the program. But what if that was just an act? What if she comes after me the way she came after Amar? I try to push the thought down where I won't find it again. A dark, scarred hand falls on my shoulder, and Max stands beside me.
You all right, Four? He says.
Yeah, I say. And it's true, I am all right. I am all right because I'm still on my feet, and I'm not yet slurring my words.
I know Amar took a particular interest in you. I think he saw strong potential.
Max smiles a little. I didn't really know him, I say.
He was always a little troubled. A little unbalanced. Not like the rest of the initiates in his class, Max says. I think losing his grandparents really took a toll on him. Or maybe the problem was deeper. I don't know. It could be that he's better off this way.
Better off dead? I say, scowling at him.
That's not exactly what I meant, Max says. But here in Dauntless, we encourage our members to choose their own paths through life. If this is what he chose, so much the better.
He puts his hand on my shoulder again.
Depending on how you do in your final examination tomorrow, you and I should talk about the future you'd like to have here in Dauntless. You're by far our most promising initiate, despite your background.
I just keep staring at him. I don't even understand what he's saying, or why he's saying it here at Amar's memorial service. Is he trying to recruit me? For what? Zeke returns with two cups, and Max melts into the crowd like nothing ever happened. One of Amar's friends stands on a chair and shouts something meaningless about Amar being brave enough to explore the unknown. Everyone lifts their glasses and chants his name.
Amar! Amar! Amar!
They say it so many times that it loses all meaning. The noise, relentless and repetitive, and all-consuming. Then we all drink. This is how the Dauntless mourn. By chasing grief into the oblivion of alcohol and leaving it there. All right. Fine. I can chase it too. My final examination, my fear landscape, is administered by Tori and observed by the Dauntless leaders, including Max. I go somewhere in the middle of the pack of initiates, and for the first time, I'm not even a little bit nervous. I jab myself in the neck with the needle and let reality disappear. I've done it dozens of times. I find myself at the top of a high building and run off the edge. I get shut into a box and allow myself a brief moment of panic before slamming my shoulder into the right wall, shattering the wood with the impact, impossibly. I pick up a gun and shoot an innocent person, this time a faceless man dressed in Dauntless black, in the head, without even thinking about it. This time, when the Marcuses surround me, they look more like him than they did before. His mouth is a mouth, though his eyes are still empty pits. And when he draws back his arm to hit me, he's holding a belt, not a barbed chain or some other weapon that can tear me apart piece by piece. I take a few hits, then dive at the nearest Marcus, wrapping my hands around his throat. I punch wildly at his face, and the violence gives me just a brief moment of satisfaction before I wake up, crouched on the floor of the Fear landscape room. The lights go on in the room beyond this one, so I can see the people inside it. There are two rows of waiting initiates, including Eric, who now has so many piercings in his lip that I find myself daydreaming about yanking them out one by one. Sitting in front of them are the three dauntless leaders, including Max, all of whom are nodding and smiling. Tori gives me a thumbs up. I went into the examination thinking I didn't care anymore. Not about passing, not about doing well, not about being dauntless. But Tori's thumbs up makes me swell with pride, and I let myself smile a little when I walk out. Amar may be dead, but he always wanted me to do well. I can't say I did it for him. I didn't really do it for anyone, not even myself. But at least I didn't embarrass him. All the initiates who are finished with their final examination wait for the results in the transfer dormitory, dauntless borns and transfers alike. Zeke and Shauna whoop when I come in, and I sit down on the edge of my bed.
"How'd it go?"
Zeke asks me. "Fine," I say. "No surprises. Yours?"
"Awful, but I made it out alive," he says, shrugging. "Shauna got some new ones, though."
"I handled them,"
Shauna says with exaggerated nonchalance. She has a pillow across her knees, one of Eric's. He won't like that. Her act breaks and she grins.
"I was pretty awesome."
"Yeah, yeah," Zeke says.
Shauna smacks him with the pillow right in the face. He snatches it from her. "What do you want me to say? Yes, you were awesome. Yes, you're the best dauntless ever. Happy?" He hits her in the shoulder with the pillow. "She's been bragging nonstop since we started the Fear Sims because she's better at them than I am. It's annoying."
"It's just revenge for how much you brag during combat training," she says.
"Did you see that great hit I got right in the beginning? Blah, blah, blah."
She pushes him, and he grabs her wrists. She breaks free and flicks his ear, and they're laughing, fighting. I may not understand dauntless affection, but apparently I know flirtation when I see it. I smirk. I guess that resolves the Shauna question, not that it was really plaguing me. That was probably an answer in and of itself. We sit around for another hour as the others finish their final exams, trickling in one after another. The last one to come in is Eric, and he just stands in the doorway looking smug.
"Time to get our results," he says.
The others all get up and walk past him on their way out. Some of them seem nervous. Others look cocky, sure of themselves. I wait until they're all gone before I walk to the doorway, but I don't go through it. I stop, crossing my arms and staring at Eric for a few seconds.
"Got something to say?" he says.
"I know it was you," I say. "Who told the erudite about Amar? I know."
"I don't know what you're talking about," he says.
But it's obvious that he does. "You're the reason he's dead," I say. I'm surprised by how quickly the anger comes on. My body quakes with it, my face hot.
"Did you get hit in the head during your exam, stiff?"
Eric says, smirking.
"You're not making any sense."
I shove him back hard against the door. Then I hold him there with one arm. I'm surprised for a moment how much stronger I am, and lean in close to his face.
"I know it was you," I say, searching his black eyes for something, anything.
I see nothing. Just dead fish eyes. Impenetrable.
"You're the reason he's dead, and you won't get away with it."
I let him go, and walk down the hallway toward the cafeteria. The dining hall is packed with people dressed in their dauntless best. All piercings exaggerated by flash earrings, all tattoos on display, even if it means going without clothing. I try to keep my eyes on people's faces as I navigate through the crush of bodies. The scents of cake and cooked meat and bread and spices are on the air, making my mouth water. I forgot to eat lunch. When I reach my usual table, I steal a roll from Zeke's plate when he's not looking and stand with the others to wait for our results. I hope they won't make us wait too long. I feel like I'm holding a live wire, my hands twitching and my thoughts frantic, scattered. Zeke and Shauna try to talk to me, but none of us can shout loud enough over the noise for them to hear me, so we resign ourselves to waiting without speaking. Max gets on one of the tables and holds up his hands for quiet. He mostly gets it, though even he can't completely silence the Dauntless, some of whom go on talking and joking like nothing ever happened. Still, I can hear him as he gives his speech.
A few weeks ago, a group of scrawny, scared initiates gave their blood to the Coles and made the big jump into Dauntless, Max says. To be honest, I didn't think any of them would make it through the first day.
He pauses to allow for laughter, and it comes, even though it wasn't a very good joke.
But I'm pleased to announce that this year, all of our initiates attained the required scores necessary to become Dauntless.
Everyone cheers. Despite the assurance that they won't be cut, Zeke and Shauna exchange nervous looks. The order in which we are ranked still determines what kind of job we can choose in Dauntless. Zeke puts his arm across Shauna's shoulders and squeezes. I feel suddenly alone again.
No more delays, Max says. I know our initiates are jumping out of their skin. So here are our 12 new Dauntless members.
The initiates' names appear on a large screen behind him, large enough even for people at the back of the room to see. I search the list automatically for their names. 6, Zeke. 7, Ash. 8, Shauna. Instantly, some of my tension disappears. I follow the list up, and panic stabs me for just a second when I can't find my own name. But then, there it is. Right at the top. 1. 4. 2. Eric. Shauna lets out a yell, and she and Zeke crush me into a sloppy hug, their weight almost knocking me to the ground. I laugh and bring my arms up to return the gesture. Somewhere in the chaos, I dropped my dinner roll. I crush it under my heel and smile as people surround me. People I don't even know, slapping my shoulders and grinning and saying my name. My name, which is only 4 now. All suspicions about my origin and identity forgotten now that I am one of them. Now that I am Dauntless. I am not Tobias Eaton. Not anymore. Never again. I am Dauntless. That night, dizzy with excitement and so full of food I can hardly walk, I slip away from the celebration and climb the paths to the top of the pit, to the lobby of the pyre. I walk out of the doors and suck in a deep breath of the night air, which is cool and refreshing, unlike the hot, close air in the cafeteria. I walk toward the train tracks, too full of manic energy to stay still. There is a train coming, the light fixed to its front car blinking as it comes toward me. It charges past with power and energy, loud as thunder in my ears. I lean closer to it, for the first time savoring the thrill of fear in my stomach, to be so close to such a dangerous thing. Then, I see something dark and human-like standing in one of the last cars. A tall, lean female figure, leaning out of the car, holding onto one of the handles. For just a second, as the blur of the train passes me, I see dark, curly hair and a hooked nose. She looks almost like my mother. And then she's gone. Gone with the train.
The sun. The small apartment is bare. The floor still streaked with broomstrokes at the corners. I don't own anything to fill the space except my abnegation clothes, which are stuffed into the bottom of the bag at my side. I throw it on the bare mattress and check the drawers beneath the bed for sheets. The Dauntless Lottery was kind to me because I was ranked first, and because unlike my outgoing fellow initiates, I wanted to live alone. The others, like Zeke and Shauna, grew up surrounded by Dauntless community, and to them the silence
and the stillness of living alone would be unbearable. I make the bed quickly, pulling the top sheet taut so it almost has corners. The sheets are worn in places, from moths or from prior use, I'm not sure. The blanket, a blue quilt, smells like cedar and dust. When I open the bag that contains my meager possessions, I hold the abnegation shirt, torn from where I had to tear away fabric to bind the wound in my hand, in front of me. It looks small. I doubt I could even fit into it if I tried to put it on now. But I don't try. I just fold it and drop it in the drawer. I hear a knock, and I say, "Come in," thinking it's Zeke or Shauna. But Max, a tall man with dark skin and bruised knuckles, walks into my apartment, his hands folded in front of him. He surveys the room once and curls his lip with disgust at the gray slacks folded on my bed. The reaction surprises me a little. There aren't many in this city who would choose abnegation as their faction, but there aren't many who hate it either. Apparently, I've found one of them. I stand, unsure what to say. There's a faction leader in my apartment. "Hello," I say.
"Sorry to interrupt," he says. "I'm surprised you didn't choose to room with your fellow former initiates. You did make some friends, didn't you?"
"Yeah," I say. "This just feels more normal."
"I guess it'll take you some time to let go of your old faction."
Max skims the counter in my small kitchen with a fingertip, looks at the dust he collected, then wipes his hand on his pants. He gives me a critical look, one that tells me to let go of my old faction faster. If I was still an initiate, I might worry about that look. But I'm a dauntless member now, and he can't take that away from me, no matter how stiff I seem. Can he?
"This afternoon you'll pick your job," Max says. "Did you have anything in mind?"
"I guess it depends on what's available," I say. "I'd like to do something with teaching. Like what Amar did, maybe."
"I think the first ranked initiate can do a little better than initiation instructor, don't you?"
Max's eyebrows lift, and I notice that one doesn't move as much as the other. It's crossed with a scar.
"I came because an opportunity has opened up."
He pulls a chair out from under the small table near the kitchen counter, turns it, and sits on it backward. His black boots are caked with light brown mud, and the laces are knotted and fraying at the ends. He might be the oldest dauntless I've ever seen, but he may as well be made of steel.
"To be honest, one of my fellow leaders of dauntless is getting a little old for the job," Max says.
I sit on the edge of the bed.
"The remaining four of us think it would be a good idea to get some new blood in leadership. New ideas for new dauntless members and initiation, specifically. That task is usually given to the youngest leader anyway, so it's a good fit. We were thinking of drawing from the more recent initiate classes for a training program to see if anyone is a good candidate. You're a natural choice."
I feel like my skin is too tight for me suddenly. Is he really suggesting that at the age of 16 I could qualify as a dauntless leader?
"The training program will last at least a year," Max says. "It will be rigorous, and it will test your skills in a lot of areas. We both know you'll do just fine in the fear landscape portion."
I nod without thinking. He must not mind my self-assuredness because he smiles a little.
"You won't need to go to the job selection meeting later today," Max says. "Training will start very soon. Tomorrow morning, in fact."
"Wait," I say, a thought breaking through the muddle in my mind. "I don't have a choice?"
"Of course you have a choice."
He looks puzzled.
"I just assumed someone like you would rather train to be a leader than spend all day standing around a fence with a gun on his shoulder, or lecturing initiates about good fighting technique. But if I was wrong..."
I don't know why I'm hesitating. I don't want to spend my days guarding the fence or patrolling the city or even pacing the training room floor. I may have an aptitude for fighting, but that doesn't mean I want to do it all day, every day. The chance to make a difference in Dauntless appeals to the abnegation parts of me. The parts that are lingering around, occasionally demanding attention. I think I just don't like when I'm not given a choice. I shake my head. No, you weren't wrong. I clear my throat and try to sound stronger, more determined. I want to do it. Thank you.
Excellent.
Max gets up and cracks one of his knuckles, idly, like it's an old habit. He holds out his hand for me to shake, and I take it. Though the gesture is still unfamiliar to me, the abnegation would never touch each other so casually.
Come to the conference room near my office tomorrow morning at 8. It's in the pyre, 10th floor.
He leaves, scattering bits of dried earth from the bottom of his shoes as he walks out. I sweep them up with the broom that leans against the wall near the door. It's not until I'm scooting the chair back under the table that I realize, if I become a Dauntless leader, a representative of my faction, I'll have to come face to face with my father again. And not just once, but constantly, until he finally retires into abnegation obscurity. My fingers start to go numb. I've faced my fear so many times in simulations, but that doesn't mean I'm ready to face them in reality.
Dude, you missed it!
Zeke is wide-eyed, concerned.
The only jobs left by the end were the gross jobs, like scrubbing toilets. Where were you?
It's fine, I say as I carry my tray back to our table near the doors. Shauna is there with her little sister Lynn and Lynn's friend Marlene. When I first saw them there, I wanted to turn around and leave immediately. Marlene is too cheerful for me even on a good day. But Zeke had already seen me, so it was too late. Behind us, Uriah jogs to catch up, his plate loaded with more food than he can possibly pack into his stomach. I didn't miss anything. Max came to see me earlier. As we take our seats at the table under one of the bright blue lamps that hang from the wall, I tell him about Max's offer. Careful not to make it sound too impressive. I only just found friends. I don't want to create jealous tensions between us for no reason. When I finish, Shauna leans her face into one of her hands and says to Zeke,
I guess we should have tried harder during initiation, huh?
Or killed him before he could take his final test.
Or both.
Shauna grins at me.
Congrats, Four. You deserve it.
I feel everyone's eyes on me like distinct, powerful beams of heat and hurry to change the subject.
Where did you guys end up? Control room, Zeke says. My mom used to work there and she taught me most of what I'll need to know already.
I'm in the patrol leadership track thing,
Shauna says.
Not the most exciting job ever, but at least I'll get to be outside.
Yeah. Let's hear you say that in the dead of winter when you're trudging through a foot of snow and ice,
Lynn says sourly. She stabs at a pile of mashed potatoes with her fork.
I better do well in initiation. I don't want to get stuck at the fence. Didn't we talk about this? Uriah says. Don't say the I word until at most 2 weeks before it happens. It makes me want to throw up.
I look at the pile of food on his tray. Stuffing yourself up to your eyeballs with food, though. That's fine. He rolls his eyes at me and bends over his tray to keep eating. I poke at my own food. I haven't had any appetite since this morning. Too worried about tomorrow to stand a full stomach. Zeke spots someone across the cafeteria.
I'll be right back.
Shauna watches him cross the room to greet a few young Dauntless members. They don't look much older than he is, but I don't recognize them from initiation, so they must be a year or two older. Zeke says something to the group, mostly made up of girls, that sends them into fits of laughter, and he jabs one of the girls in the ribs, making her squeal. Beside me, Shauna glowers and misses her mouth with her fork, smearing sauce from the chicken all over her cheek. Lynn snorts into her food, and Marlene kicks her, audibly, under the table.
So, Marlene says loudly, do you know of anyone else who's doing that leadership program for?
Come to think of it, I didn't see Eric there today either, Shauna says. I was hoping he tripped and fell into the chasm, but
I shove a bite of food in my mouth and try not to think about it. The blue light makes my hands look blue, too, like the hands of a corpse. I haven't spoken to Eric since I accused him of being indirectly responsible for Amar's death. Someone reported Amar's simulation awareness to Janine Matthews, leader of Erudite. And as a former Erudite, Eric is the most likely suspect. I haven't decided what I'll do next time I talk to him either. Beating him up again isn't going to prove that he's a faction traitor. I'll have to find some way to connect his recent activities to the Erudite and take the information to one of the Dauntless leaders. Max, probably, since I know him best. Zeke walks back to the table and slides into his seat.
Four, what are you doing tomorrow night?
I don't know, I say. Nothing?
Not anymore, he says. You're coming with me on a date.
I choke on my next bite of potatoes.
What? Hate to tell you this, big brother, Uriah says, but you're supposed to go on dates alone, not bring a friend. It's a double date, obviously, Zeke says. I asked Maria out, and she said something about finding a date for her friend Nicole, and I indicated that you would be interested.
Which one's Nicole?
Lynn says, craning her neck to look at the group of girls.
The redhead, Zeke says. So, 8 o'clock, you're in, I'm not even asking.
I don't, I say. I look at the red-headed girl across the room. She's fair-skinned with wide eyes smeared with black, and wearing a tight shirt which shows off the bend in her waist, and other things my inner abnegation voice tells me not to notice. I do, anyway. I've never been on a date, thanks to my former faction's strict courtship rituals, involving engaging in acts of service together and maybe, having dinner with someone else's family and helping them clean up afterward. I've never even thought about whether I wanted to date anyone. It was such an impossibility. Zeke, I've never... Uriah frowns and pokes my arm, hard, with one finger. I slap his hand away.
What?
Oh, nothing, Uriah says cheerfully.
You were just sounding stiffer than usual, so I thought I would check.
Marlene laughs.
Yeah, right.
Zeke and I exchange a look. We've never explicitly talked about not sharing my faction of origin, but as far as I know, he's never mentioned it to anyone. Uriah knows, but despite his loud mouth, he seems to understand when to withhold information. Still, I'm not sure why Marlene hasn't figured it out. Maybe she's not very observant.
It's not a big deal, Four, Zeke says.
He eats his last bite of food.
You'll go, you'll talk to her like she's a normal human being, which she is. Maybe she'll let you, gasp, hold her hand.
Shauna gets up suddenly, her chair screeching on the stone floor. She tucks her hair behind one ear and walks toward the tray return, head down. Lynn glares at Zeke, which hardly looks different from her normal facial expression, and follows her sister across the cafeteria.
Okay, you don't have to hold hands with anyone, Zeke says like nothing happened. Just go, all right? I'll owe you one.
I look at Nicole. She's sitting at a table near the tray return and laughing at someone else's joke again. Maybe Zeke's right. Maybe it's not that big a deal. And maybe this is another way that I can unlearn my abnegation past and learn to embrace my dauntless future. And besides, she's pretty.
Okay, I say. I'll go.
But if you make some kind of joke about hand-holding, I'm going to break your nose. When I get back to my apartment that night, it still smells like dust and a hint of mold. I turn on one of the lamps, and a glimmer of light reflects off the countertop. I run my hand over it, and a small piece of glass pricks my finger, making it bleed. I pinch it between my fingertips and carry it to the trash can, which I put a bag in this morning. But resting at the bottom of the bag now is a pile of shards in the shape of a drinking glass. I haven't used one of those yet. A shiver goes down my spine, and I scan the rest of the apartment for signs of disruption. The sheets aren't rumpled,
None of the drawers are open. None of the chairs seem to have moved. But I would know if I had broken a glass that morning. So who was in my apartment?
I don't know why, but the first thing my hands find in the morning when I stumble into the bathroom is the set of hair clippers I got with my Dauntless credits yesterday. And then, while I'm still blinking the clouds from my eyes, I turn them on and touch them to my head the way I've done since I was young. I bend my ear forward to protect it from the blades. I know just how to twist and shift so that I can see as much of the back of my head as possible. The ritual calms my nerves, makes me feel focused and steady. I brush the trimmed hairs from my shoulders and neck and sweep them into the wastebasket. It's an abnegation morning. A quick shower, a plain breakfast, a clean house. Except I'm wearing Dauntless black. Boots and pants and shirt and jacket. I avoid looking in the mirror on my way out, and it makes me grit my teeth, knowing how deep these stiff roots go, and how hard it will be to excise them from my mind, as tangled up in everything as they are. I left that place out of fear and defiance, and that will make it harder to assimilate than anyone knows. Harder than if I had actually chosen Dauntless for the right reasons. I walk quickly toward the pit, emerging through an arch halfway up the wall. I stay away from the edge of the path, though Dauntless children, shrieking with laughter, sometimes run right along it, and I should be braver than they are. I'm not sure bravery is something you acquire more of with age, like wisdom. But maybe here, in Dauntless, bravery is the highest form of wisdom. The acknowledgement that life can and should be lived without fear. It's the first time I've found myself being thoughtful about Dauntless life, so I hold on to the thought as I ascend the paths around the pit. I reach the staircase that hangs from the glass ceiling and keep my eyes up, away from the space opening up beneath me, so I don't start to panic. But my heart is pounding by the time I reach the top anyway. I can feel it, even in my throat. Max said his office was on the 10th floor, so I ride the elevator up with a group of Dauntless going to work. They don't all seem to know one another. Unlike the abnegation, it's not as important to them to memorize names and faces and needs and wants, so maybe they just keep to their friends and families, forming rich but separate communities within their faction, like the one I'm forming myself. When I reach the 10th floor, I'm not sure where to go, but then I spot a dark head turning a corner in front of me. Eric. I follow him. Partly because he probably knows where he's going, but partly because I want to know what he's doing even if he's not going to the same place I am. But when I turn the corner, I see Max standing in a conference room that has glass walls, surrounded by young Dauntless. The oldest one is maybe 20, and the youngest is probably not much older than I am. Max sees me through the glass and motions for me to come in. Eric sits close to him. Suck up, I think. But I sit at the other end of the table, between a girl with a ring through her nostrils and a boy whose hair is such a bright shade of green I can't look straight at him. I feel plain by comparison. I may have gotten Dauntless flames tattooed on my side during initiation, but it's not like they're on display.
I think everyone is here, so let's get started.
Max closes the door to the conference room and stands before us. He looks strange in such an ordinary environment. Like he's here to break all the glass and cause chaos rather than lead this meeting.
You're all here because you've shown potential, first, but also because you've displayed enthusiasm for our faction and its future.
I don't know how I've done that.
Our city is changing, faster now than ever before, and in order to keep up with it, we'll have to change too. We'll have to become stronger. Braver, better than we are now. And among you are the people who can get us there. But we'll have to figure out who they are. We'll be doing a combination of instruction and skills tests for the next several months to teach you what you'll need to know if you make it through this program. But also to see how quickly you learn.
That sounds a little like something the erudite would value, not the Dauntless. Strange.
The first thing you'll do is fill out this info sheet, he says,
and I almost laugh. There's something ridiculous about a tough, hardened, dauntless warrior with a stack of papers he calls info sheets. But of course some things have to be ordinary, because it's more efficient that way. He sends the stack around the table, along with a bundle of pens.
All this will do is tell us more about you and give us a starting point by which to measure your progress. So it's in your best interest to be honest and not to make yourself sound better than you are.
I feel unsettled, staring at the sheet of paper. I fill out my name, which is the first question, and my age, the second. The third asks for my faction of origin, and the fourth asks for my number of fears. The fifth asks what those fears are. I'm not sure how to describe them. The first two are easy. Heights, confinement. But the next one? And what am I supposed to write about my father? That I'm afraid of Marcus Eaton? Eventually, I scribble, losing control for my third fear, and physical threats in confined spaces for my fourth, knowing that that's far from true. But the next few questions are strange, confusing. They're statements, trickily worded, that I'm supposed to agree or disagree with. It's okay to steal if it's to help someone else. Well, that's easy enough. Agree. Some people are more deserving of rewards than others. Maybe. Depends on the rewards. Power should be given only to those who earn it. Difficult circumstances form stronger people. You don't know how strong a person really is until they're tested. I glance around the table at the others. Some people seem puzzled, but no one looks the way I feel. Disturbed. Almost afraid to circle an answer beneath each statement. I don't know what to do, so I circle agree for each one and pass my sheet back with everyone else's. Zeke and his date, Maria, are pressed up against a wall in the hallway next to the pit. I can see their silhouettes from here. It looks like they're still just as pressed up against each other as they were 5 minutes ago when they first went back there, giggling like idiots the whole time. I cross my arms and look back at Nicole. So, I say.
So, she says, tipping forward onto the balls of her feet and back onto her heels again. This is a little awkward, right?
Yeah, I say, relieved. It is.
How long have you been friends with Zeke? She says. I haven't seen you around much.
A few weeks, I say. We met during initiation.
Oh, she says. Were you a transfer?
I don't want to admit that I transferred from abnegation, partly because whenever I admit that, people start thinking I'm uptight, and partly because I don't like to toss out hints about my parentage when I can avoid it. I decide to lie. No, just kept to myself before then, I guess.
Oh.
She narrows her eyes a little.
You must have been really good at it.
One of my specialties, I say. How long have you been friends with Maria?
Since we were kids.
She could trip and fall and land on a date with someone, Nicole says. Others of us aren't as talented. Yeah, I shake my head. Zeke had to push me into this a little.
Really?
Nicole raises an eyebrow.
Did he at least show you what you were in for?
She points at herself.
Yeah, I say. I wasn't sure if you were my type, but I thought maybe...
Not your type.
She sounds cold suddenly. I try to backtrack. I mean, I don't think that's that important, I say. Personality is much more important than...
Than my unsatisfactory looks?
She raises both eyebrows. That's not what I said, I say. I'm really terrible at this.
Yeah, she says. You are. She grabs the small black bag that was resting against her feet and tucks it under her arm. Tell Maria I had to go home early. She stalks away from the railing and disappears into one of the paths next to the pit. I sigh and look at Zeke and Maria again. I can tell by the faint movements I'm able to detect that they haven't slowed down at all. I tap my fingers against the railing. Now that our double date has become an awkward, triangle-shaped date, it must be all right for me to leave. I spot Shauna coming out of the cafeteria and wave to her.
Isn't tonight your big date with Ezekiel? She says.
Ezekiel, I say, cringing. I forgot that was his whole name.
Yeah, my date just stormed off. Good one, she says, laughing. What'd you last, 10 minutes?
5, I say. And I find myself laughing, too. Apparently, I'm insensitive.
No, she says with mock surprise.
You? But you're so sentimental and sweet.
Funny, I say. Where's Lynn?
She started arguing with Hector, our little brother, she says. And I've been listening to them do that for, oh, my whole life, so I left. I thought I'd go to the training room, get some exercise in. Wanna go?
Yeah, I say. Let's go. We head toward the training room, but then I realize that we have to walk down the same hallway that Zeke and Maria currently occupy to get there. I try to stop Shauna with a hand, but I'm too late. She sees their two bodies pressed together, her eyes wide. She pauses for a moment, and I hear smacking noises I wish I hadn't heard. Then she moves down the hallway again, walking so fast I have to jog to catch up to her.
Shauna, training room, she says.
When we get there, she starts immediately on the punching bag, and I've never seen her hit so hard before.
Though it might seem strange, it's important for high-level Dauntless to understand how a few programs work, Max says. The surveillance program in the control room is an obvious one. A Dauntless leader will sometimes have to monitor the things happening in the faction. Then there's the simulation programs, which you have to understand in order to evaluate Dauntless initiates. Also the currency tracking program, which keeps commerce in our faction running smoothly, among others. Some of these programs are pretty sophisticated, which means you'll have to be able to learn computer skills easily if you don't already have them. That's what we'll be doing today. He gestures to the woman standing at his left shoulder. I recognize her from the game of Dare. She's young, with purple streaks in her short hair, and more piercings than I can easily count.
Lauren here will be teaching you some of the basics, and then we'll test you, Max says. Lauren is one of our initiation instructors, but in her downtime she works as a computer technician in Dauntless headquarters. It's a little erudite of her, but we'll let it slide for the sake of convenience.
Max winks at her, and she grins.
Go ahead, he says. I'll be back in an hour.
Max leaves, and Lauren claps her hands together.
Right, she says. Today we're going to talk about how programming works. Those of you who already have some experience with this, please feel free to tune out. The rest of you better keep focused because I'm not going to repeat myself. Learning this stuff is like learning a language. It's not enough to memorize the words. You also have to understand the rules and why they work the way they do.
When I was younger, I volunteered in the computer labs in the upper levels building to meet my faction-mandated volunteer hours and to get out of the house. And I learned how to take a computer apart and put it back together. But I never learned about this. The next hour passes in a blur of technical terms I can barely keep up with. I try to jot some notes on a piece of scrap paper I found on the floor, but she's moving so fast it's hard for my hand to keep up with my ears. So I abandon the effort after a few minutes and just try to pay attention. She shows examples of what she's talking about on a screen at the front of the room, and it's hard not to be distracted by the view from the windows behind her. From this angle, the pyre displays the city's skyline, the prongs of the hub piercing the sky, the marsh peeking from between the glimmering buildings. I'm not the only one who seems overwhelmed. The other candidates lean over to one another to whisper frantically, asking for definitions they missed. Eric, however, sits comfortably in his chair, drawing on the back of his hand, smirking. I recognize that smirk. Of course he already knows all this stuff. He must have learned it in erudite, probably when he was a child, or else he wouldn't look quite so smug. Before I can really register the passage of time, Lauren is pressing a button for the display screen to withdraw onto the ceiling.
On the desktop of your computer, you'll find a file marked Programming Test, she says. Open it. It will take you to a timed exam. You'll go through a series of small programs and mark the errors you find that are causing them to malfunction. They might be really big things, like the order of the code, or really small things, like a misplaced word or marking. You don't have to fix them right now, but you do have to be able to spot them. There will be